Welcome to the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index call. My name is Vanessa, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To queue up with a question, you can press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded, and I will now turn the call over to your host, Mr. Mark Schirmer.
Great. Thank you, Vanessa, and Happy New Year to everyone. Let me add my welcome to the Q4 Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index conference call. Thank you very much for joining us. As Vanessa said, my name is Mark Schirmer. I'm the Director of Public Relations for Cox Automotive, the parent company of Manheim. And with me today, we have Jonathan Smoke, the Chief Economist for Cox Automotive, and Zoe Rahim, Manager of Economic Industry Insights. The presentation Jonathan and Zoe will be reviewing today is available for download at the Learning Center at www.coxautoinc.com and also at the Manheim Consulting website. You should have by now received a link to all that material in an email from manheim.data@coxautoinc.com. As Vanessa, I think, noted, the call will be recorded and will be available for playback beginning later today. To listen to the playback, you simply read out the conference call number and use the same passcode. The recording will be available for about a month, and then we can help you find it if you reach out to manheim.data. As noted, following the presentation, Jonathan and Zoe will have a Q&A. Our operator will help manage that Q&A session, and we've allocated about an hour of time for this. I'll now hand the call over to Jonathan and Zoe, who's going to start our presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you all for participating in today's call. Happy New Year. I hope everyone enjoyed the holiday season with friends and family. I also hope you enjoyed college football over the last week as much as I have. First, we had the Longhorns winning the Sugar Bowl and defying the experts. I think Zoe may not be as pleased with that one. It was also nice to see the evil empire crushed last night. But enough about football. Let's talk about what everybody really wants to talk about, and that's used car prices. 2018 was truly a remarkable year for used vehicle values. As we started the year, we told you to expect a 3% increase in the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index in 2018, and we told you to expect a roller coaster ride with weakness in Q1 and strength in Q2. Well, how did we do? The call on the roller coaster ride was absolutely correct. In fact, the roller coaster ended up being even more extreme than we anticipated. Indeed, 2018 started with the market correcting from the 2017 hurricane run-up, but then a very strong spring market saw price gains in April and May. What we didn't expect was the abnormal summer appreciation trend that started in June and pushed the Manheim Index to new records in July, August, September, and October. After normalizing depreciation began to kick in during the fourth quarter, we ended the year with even better price performance than we forecasted, which Zoe will detail. But as far as our forecast of above average 3% gains, we're taking credit today for guiding you into the right ballpark and keeping you appraised of how the market changed throughout the year. As we do each quarter, Zoe and I will review the key trends across the various aspects of this complex and dynamic industry. We'll review the key aggregate trends while also highlighting important changes occurring in the details so you can have better visibility into the likely road ahead. We will start by going through a summary presentation which is available to download at coxautoinc.com/learningcenter as well as on manheim.com/consulting, and we'll reference those slides as we move along today. We will take questions after we walk through the presentation. Let's start off with a reminder of what the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index is. The purpose of the index is to provide a single measure of used vehicle price change that is comparable over time, but also evolves to continue to represent the vehicles actually being sold. We take all Manheim sales in the U.S., classify by market segment, account for differences in mileage, weight to provide a smoother segment mix, and seasonally adjust to make the index comparable over time. The index we report is a reliable indicator of what dealers are paying for used vehicle inventory in the wholesale market, informed by millions of transactions each year. As I just mentioned, we ended the third quarter with the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index at an all-time high. We then saw gains extend into October, but in November we retreated with above average levels of depreciation, putting us back to midsummer price levels. That sets the stage for what happened in December. Zoe, please share with us the official results.
Thanks, Jonathan. And I'm recovering from a cold, so I apologize for my voice. Wholesale used vehicle prices on a mixed mileage and seasonally adjusted basis decreased 1.03% month over month in December. This brought the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index to 137.6, a 4.3% increase from a year ago. On slide 5, we see that the year-over-year price performance of the seasonally adjusted series has been stronger than average over the last 12 months. However, the above-average price performance is not abnormal from a historical perspective, as we have had periods of strong price performance at auction and periods of underperformance. It's important to keep in mind that the index is a dollar amount, not a residual percentage, so it will naturally show an upward drift over time. To put our index in more a residual percentage perspective, although, again, that's not what we're trying to do, we look at our index versus the new vehicle CPI with a 3.5-year lag, as you see on slide 6. This, too, for technical reasons, should show an upward drift over time. Currently, wholesale price is above trend due to the abnormal price increases we experienced in the summer. On slide 7, we show the average new vehicle transaction price from Kelley Blue Book in red compared to the non-seasonally adjusted Manheim Index price represented in blue. This is so you can clearly see the seasonal pattern in both series and how they differ from one another. New vehicle prices peak in December as the effect of full new vehicles impact the calculations. Over time, new vehicle prices typically rise more than inflation, or close to 3% on average. This is a result of inflation and quality and technology improvements. Used vehicle prices, on the other hand, typically grow less than inflation, closer to 2% on average, but they grow as a result of the inherent inflation in new vehicle prices. Within the year, used vehicle prices peak differently than new, typically in March and April, which are normally the busiest sales months as a result of tax refund season. The pattern in 2017 was a bit different as prices took longer to peak in May and June. In 2017, we had hurricanes driving up prices to records at a very abnormal time of year. We ended the year before prices had a chance to correct down to where they would typically end. But notice, we did see the usual price patterns in 2018 until the spring, and then an even higher increase in the summer when prices increased at an abnormal time of year.
Thanks, though. To get to the heart of the abnormal summer, we need to look no further than the depreciation pattern in three-year-old vehicles, which is the most dominant vintage of vehicles sold at Manheim. Depreciation is natural, but it's hard to detect in an average price time series that has a constantly fresher mix of vehicles being sold, unless you fix the basket and age of the vehicles. The chart on slide 8 uses Manheim's MMR data, or Manheim Market Report data, on three-year-old vehicles only, and their pricing by week relative to the beginning of each calendar year. Three-year-old vehicles are very relevant to track as they represent the most popular vintage of vehicles sold at auction. In 2018, 21% of vehicles sold at Manheim were model year 2015. The normal pattern with three-year-old vehicles seen in 2015 for model year 2012 vehicles has a spring bounce as strong retail demand related to tax refunds causes these three-year-old vehicles and most other vehicles to be worth more in March than they were worth at the beginning of the year. Then normal depreciation kicks in such that usually three-year-old vehicles lose about 10% of their value by the end of the year relative to how they started. Focus on the purple line and see just how incredible this summer was. There was a spring bounce this year, similar in magnitude to 2015, just delayed by 3 weeks, which is exactly in alignment with the delay in tax refunds reaching their peak this year. The spring bounce lasted a full 4 weeks, but then depreciation kicked in as the spring market faded. But something changed in early June, and prices started rising again. We saw 11 straight weeks of price appreciation this summer when we'd normally see depreciation in used vehicle prices. Vehicles are depreciating assets that lose close to 1% of their value each month as a function of adding mileage and normal wear and tear. Price appreciation normally only occurs in the spring at the height of tax refund season, when tax refunds spur the most used vehicle sales in a typical year. Appreciation is also not typically widespread, as the usual spring bounce only occurs with non-luxury vehicles. This abnormal 2018 summer appreciation trend stopped in aggregate at the end of August, when prices were then flat for 1 week. In September, we saw several weeks of lower and then normal depreciation, which led to higher levels of depreciation in October and November, and then lower but slightly higher depreciation than normal for December. Even with the higher depreciation in the fourth quarter, the strong summer trend leaves us with used car prices on average up by 2% over where they would have been had we not had that summer appreciation run. All major segments saw appreciation during the 11-week trend, but the most pronounced appreciation was in the most affordable cars, specifically compacts and mid-sized cars. Slide 9 shows that the price gains were more pronounced when we look just at non-luxury 3-year-old vehicles. There is no question that affordability has played a major driving role in the 2018 retail used market. Now look at slide 10. In contrast to non-luxury, luxury prices on 3-year-old vehicles had been softer than last year, but they too saw a bounce this summer. It just wasn't as significant as the more affordable segments. The comparison to last year was tougher for luxury than non-luxury, but prices relative to the beginning of the year ended 2018 on par with how they performed in 2017. Slide 11 shows a new index that we are tracking on 1-year-old models, which are principally rental risk and program vehicles. These vehicles did not see as much appreciation this summer, but they also didn't see much depreciation earlier in the year. With recent depreciation, 1-year-old vehicles ended the year down a little less than 9% from the beginning of the year. That was slightly worse performance than last year, which had a much better fall time frame. However, 2018 was still better for 1-year-old vehicles than 2015 or 2016. Slide 12 shows retention values year-to-date and compared to 2017 and 2016. This is from Kelley Blue Book. Each line represents 1- to 3-year-old models in each year and is sales-weighted by the new vehicle sales represented for each of those years. KBB takes the auction values, adjusts for MSRP, and fixes the basket of vehicles based on what was sold as new. As a result, it is a solid indicator of what leasing companies have been experiencing with residuals that were on the decline until last summer. The pattern this year looks very similar to what we saw with the 3-year-old MMR trends. The year started off looking worse than last year, with retention values down a full percent at the end of January. But then the spring bounce in values pulled up retention values to a more than 1% gain. Then the summer gains pushed values up to 2% at the peak. October was a tougher comparison to last year's hurricane replacement demand period, but comparisons improved to last year in November and December. So we ended up a full 2% over last year. What we have been discussing is the trend in aggregate prices across all vehicle segments. The pattern varies greatly at the market segment level. Slide 13 shows the Manheim Index December percentage change over the last 4 years for the top vehicle segments. The segment level price performance in December was similar to what we have been seeing for most of the year. Compact cars and mid-sized cars outperformed the market and posted the largest year-over-year gains. Luxury cars were the weakest segment, up only 0.2% year-over-year. Remember that inflation is not controlled for by the index calculation. If we assume a 2.2% inflation rate, used vehicles in aggregate were up by 2.1% in December. The segment level performance clearly shifted compared to last year and now favors the most affordable cars, which not coincidentally are much more scarce in the new vehicle market. Each month, we distribute data on the aggregate and these top-level segments, as well as the underlying, more detailed segments. Zoe, give us a rundown of the worst and best performing segments and the vehicles those segments represent.
Sure thing. Let's start with the worst performing segments. Premium luxury car prices declined the most in December as prices dropped 5% year over year versus the overall market being up 4.3%. The most sold premium luxury car was the 2016 Mercedes-Benz C-Class. Luxury midsize car prices declined 4.3% last month. The most sold luxury midsize car was the 2015 Infiniti Q50 all-wheel drive. Premium sports car prices fell 2.3%, with the most sold vehicle being the 2015 Maserati Quattroporte all-wheel drive V6. On the other hand, the best performing segment in December was the premium midsize car segment, which was up 7.4% year over year. The most sold premium midsize car was the 2015 Nissan Altima 4-cylinder. Premium compact cars were up 7.3%. The most sold premium compact car was the 2016 Ford Fusion. And lastly, compact pickups were up 6.6%. The most sold compact pickup was the 2018 Nissan Frontier 4-wheel drive V6.
Thanks, Zoe. Slide 14 updates what we've been sharing on shifting consumer preferences in the new vehicle market and how the SUV has surpassed the car as the dominant new vehicle sold. The used vehicle market cannot adjust as quickly. Cars still dominate at Manheim. This will likely be the case for a few more years. The changes in price performance, most notably an improvement in compact cars that has been in play all year, is a response to strengthening demand and reduced supply in the new vehicle market. Zoe will now walk us through what we're seeing in rental risk.
Looking at rentals starting on slide 15, the average price for rental risk units sold at auction in December was up 4% year over year. Rental risk prices were down 1% compared to November. As you can see on slide 16, average mileage for rental risk units in December at roughly 48,400 miles was down 3% from a year ago. The distribution of vehicles that make up rental risk on the next slide shows that the absolute number of year, make, model, body configurations is down from a peak in 2015, but it isn't getting more concentrated at the top. The top vehicles make up a smaller share, and it takes more vehicles to get to a 50% share. On slide 18, you can see that the condition of vehicles sold continues to improve. In Q4, more than 52% had a condition report score of 4 or higher, while less than 15% had a condition report score under 3. We are also seeing changes in the mix of makes sold, which follows changes in the mix of makes purchased. Slide 19 shows that the top 3 makes sold in Q4 were Chevy, Ford, and Nissan. Both Ford and Nissan saw a slight increase in share versus Q3 2018, while Chevy's share decreased quarter over quarter. Slide 20 shows rental risk units sold by market segment. Cars at 39% share in Q4 are no longer the largest segment. SUV share in Q4 2015 was roughly 28%, but it's ballooned to 41.7% in Q4 2018. As rental car companies have prioritized light truck inventory over the past year or so, we expect this shift to light truck rental risk units to continue at wholesale.
Thanks, Zoe. Slide 21 shows the top vehicles sold at Manheim in December and how they are performing from a pricing and depreciation perspective. We are seeing differing performance by segment and even by some models within the segments. All of the top-selling vehicles showed depreciation in the last 30 days, but the 2016 Ford Fusion front-wheel drive four-door sedan 2.5-liter SE is the clear outlier with far more significant price depreciation. Year-over-year price performance was even more mixed. The most affordable non-luxury vehicles outperformed most of the other segments represented. We continue to see the 2015 Nissan Altima 4-cylinder 4-door sedan S in the number one spot for sales. According to its MMR, it saw lower than normal depreciation over the last 30 days and is down only $75 year over year. Reflecting the strength in the compact car segment, the 2016 Toyota Corolla four-door sedan SE was worth $350 more on January 2nd than a year ago, but was down $100 since last month. The core reason for the last 2 years of strong price performance has been strong and growing demand for used vehicles. Slide 22 shows the trend in our estimates of annualized used vehicle sales, which improved to a level of 39.6 million units on an annualized basis in December. That's a year-over-year increase of approximately 200,000 units. We had seen a drop in used vehicle sales in November, but the pace of sales rebounded in December. We recap our most recent dealer sentiment findings on slide 23. The Q4 2018 Dealer Sentiment Index raised some warning flags about the beginning of 2019. Dealers' views of the overall market declined in the fourth quarter, driven by declines in both franchises and independents, but independents' sentiment index fell under 50, and that 50 line is important because it indicates that more independents than not describe the current market as weak. We also saw declining and differing views of the used market as independents turned negative in Q4, while franchises continue to describe the used market as strong, but not as strong as it was last quarter. Franchises also again describe the used market as stronger than the new vehicle market. The most startling change in the fourth quarter was that collectively dealers turned more negative about the future. Like with their view of the current market, independents saw a big decline in optimism, and now the pessimistic views outweigh the optimistic. Franchises remain optimistic, but their level of optimism also declined substantially. A similar drop in the future would also push franchises into a pessimistic view about the future. Optimism is fading for several reasons, including declining traffic, declining used vehicle inventory levels, higher interest rates, and rising costs. Franchises also remain concerned about tariffs and the likely impact of tariffs leading to higher prices. Independent dealers again reported that used vehicle inventory was declining in the fourth quarter, and for the second quarter in a row in total indicated that used vehicle inventory levels were declining. By contrast, franchises continue to describe used vehicle inventory as growing, but franchises have a distinct advantage with used vehicle inventory by having access to off-lease vehicles at grounding and because of the trades they see on new vehicles. Let's take a moment to review the unusual price performance this summer. With the benefit of the full year's data now, we can better interpret and provide a theory on why prices behaved the way that they did. We continue to believe that the primary catalyst was the implementation and threat of more tariffs. However, the strong summer run, followed by weaker but not fully corrected prices in the weeks since, suggests that actual tariffs and fear of more tariffs created two different forces that combined to push prices higher during the summer, but left us with prices only up about 2% after the market normalized. In the summer, we had real tariffs implemented on steel and aluminum and auto parts imported from China. These tariffs collectively increased the cost of a new vehicle by an approximate average of 2%. But at the same time, we had relentless media coverage about tariffs and the threat of the Section 232 tariff adding as much as 25% to the cost of all imported vehicles and parts. A survey we conducted in the summer showed that consumers were following the news on tariffs and that recent purchasers were influenced by the news on tariffs. That survey also showed that consumers were closely following interest rates. We believe that consumers got the message this past summer that it was better to buy sooner rather than later, and this created a temporary imbalance favoring demand over supply in the used vehicle market just at a time when supply is hard to increase. It's not just prices that reflected an increase in demand. We also observed faster moving used retail inventory, which averaged moving 12 days faster in June, July, and August over the last year. We also saw higher levels of sales efficiency at auction, which is how we describe the percentage of vehicles sold when offered. Just like in pricing, both of those trends started to moderate in the fall. The summer price appreciation may not have occurred absent an extremely strong economy and where we are in the automotive cycle where demand conditions favor the used market growing. But those were the prevailing trends before the tariff talk and actions began. And once the news started reporting about tariffs, there was clearly a demand shift that led to price increases. But part of this was pulled forward demand that now appears to have been settled. And yet we still have prices up by about 2% from where they would have been had we not had the run-up. It is important to note that it is different than what happened after the hurricanes last year. In that situation, the imbalance impact was temporary. Prices returned to the prevailing trend prior to the hurricane. But with the tariffs, we did not or have not yet seen a full correction. My take is that the market has a new equilibrium for prices now, adjusted up by 2%, as the market views vehicle costs to be about 2% higher than before the new tariffs were implemented. Wholesale supply trends are supportive of above-average price performance if demand remains consistent going forward. As discussed before, the growth in off-lease maturities is decelerating. The peak growth years were between 2014 and 2017, when off-lease maturities grew by 1.3 million units. We estimate that lease maturities grew 11% in 2018 from 2017, reaching 3.85 million units. But an improving mix of more SUVs and pickups, combined with improving equity position of lease vehicles at maturity, led to lower growth of off-lease volumes reaching the wholesale market in 2018 of only 8%. Within the wholesale market, physical off-lease units were estimated to grow just 6%, while off-site online units grew 15%. Looking ahead to 2019, we forecast that lease maturities will peak at 4.08 million units, or growth of 6% from the estimated maturities in 2018. With an improving mix and more positive equity positions, the growth in off-lease volumes in the wholesale market is projected to grow only 1% in total, as physical units decline by 3%, and off-site online units see growth of 10%. Other sources of wholesale vehicles should have a down or effectively unchanged year in 2019. Dealers do not need to consign as many vehicles when they're in strong retail demand. Repossessions have only slightly increased, even with record amounts of outstanding loans, as defaults remain low, with very low unemployment and higher disposable income trends. Rental risk sales are down as rental car companies are selling fewer vehicles and moving more rental risk sales direct to consumer. We expect total wholesale volumes to be down slightly this year, and when viewed by channel, digital is growing and upstreet channels are growing, but physical auctions are now declining. So what does this all mean for used vehicle values in 2019? Barring new tariffs being implemented, we expect used vehicle values to see another strong year of above-average growth, but not quite the year-over-year price changes we saw in 2017 and 2018. The Manheim Index is likely to end the year above 140 for about a 2.5% gain from December 2018. But price movement is likely to vary throughout the year. If we see no further changes to trade and tariffs, we would expect year-over-year price performance to decline as the year progresses, especially as we approach the spring and summer when the 2018 abnormal price performance occurred. Price movement will also clearly depend on what happens with trade and tariffs. We have important open questions regarding the ratification of the USMCA trade deal and if a new Section 232 tariff will be implemented on all other countries. Related questions are, will we see changes to tariffs on Chinese autos and parts, and will Europe and Japan work out new deals to avoid new tariffs? The possible scenarios cover a wide range of outcomes. If we have new tariffs, we would see a repeat of the abnormal price pattern we saw in 2018. If we have tariffs eliminated, we could see price corrections and accelerated depreciation. On the demand side, with strong employment conditions, consumer confidence should remain strong. A big negative factor would be additional increases in interest rates, but given recent trends in the financial markets and rhetoric from the Fed, rates could actually be stable in 2019 or even lower. However, if long-term rates soften without a change in policy from the Fed, there is also a strong possibility that credit overall will tighten, making subprime tighten, which could weigh on demand for used vehicles. We are also concerned about the tax refund season, which plays a vital role in driving demand for used vehicles and is the reason for the traditional spring bounce in used vehicle values. While the IRS now claims that tax refunds will still be paid despite the government shutdown, we suspect that there could be shutdown-related delays in the processing of forms and the issuance of refunds. When tax refunds were delayed in 2017 due to new policies to combat identity fraud, the spring bounce was delayed and heavily muted as there was a big disconnect in the timing of wholesale supply and retail demand. We are also concerned about the number and size of refunds in 2018 due to the changes in withholding tables implemented in the wake of tax reform last year. Our analysis suggests that there is potential for significant numbers of tax filers to be in a different position relative to tax refunds than they are accustomed. 75% of filers received a tax refund in 2018 on their 2017 taxes. The average refund was almost $2,800. The used car market and the broader economy would be negatively impacted if even a small percentage of households are negatively surprised by getting no refund when they are used to getting one, or worse, owing money when they are used to getting a refund. We will be issuing a report with more details on our analysis of tax refund concerns within the next week, but at this point, this is a major concern for the first quarter and could have economic implications for the rest of the year. As the year progresses, we will be watching weekly price trends closely and reporting on what is happening at Manheim, as we also keep track of the reports from the IRS and U.S. Treasury. Looking at all of these possible factors, the outlook for prices in 2019 is less than certain. Most of the wild cards should have more facts or even outright resolution in the first quarter, so by the time of our next call, we should have more confidence in forecasting the likely path for prices for the rest of 2019. The fundamentals remain solid. Used vehicle demand is at a peak. Wholesale supply is now post-peak and starting a gradual decline. At the segment level, compact and mid-sized cars are likely to continue to perform well and outperform the rest of the market. The used market is the answer for the affordability challenges in the new market. With that, operator, let's open it up for questions.
And thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question, remember you can press star, then one. If you wish to be removed from the queue, you can press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. And we have our first question from John Murphy with Bank of America.
Good morning, guys, and as always, thanks so much for all of this. It's incredibly helpful, and Happy New Year. Just a first question, just to your last point there on tax refunds. I'm just curious how you're going about that analysis, because this is something we've heard from a lot of economists and strategists in both directions, and it does seem like it could be a real pressure point in the used vehicle market if it goes into the negative. And I think as you look at this, it not only could create some disruption really in the first quarter, maybe to the downside, we'll see, but it also means that a big chunk of 2018 maybe have been inflated because people were getting more cash in from their paychecks than they really should have been. So I'm just curious how you're kind of thinking about that, how much you think 2018 benefited, and without maybe even revealing the exact conclusions, you know, how you guys are going about analyzing this, because it seems very difficult to figure out at a micro level.
Yeah, yes, indeed it is. And Happy New Year, John. So we focused on a couple of things with the analysis. One was just retrospective, looking at the year, the performance on retail spending and consumer demand and the impact on the economy throughout most of the year was much stronger than most economists originally forecasted. And indeed, you know, even new vehicle sales numbers ended much stronger than almost all of us were forecasting for the year. So we sort of had that smoking gun to suggest that was the tax refund just better, or was the tax reform producing results that enabled the consumer to be in a better position than perhaps was correct. So we then started digging into data, and the data primary data series we paid attention to were the filings from the Treasury, where they report with a bit of a lag the taxes that they have collected in the form of withholdings every month. And we did some calculations against some of the other BLS data on wages and employment conditions, and effectively backed into the calculation that appeared to suggest that withholdings were down more than the reduction in tax rates should have implied. And we're still waiting on the Treasury numbers for December to have the full year view, but that was definitely the case. And that was even taking into account that a lot of the withholdings didn't really start to substantially change until March. The second was we used our own company. So Cox Automotive employs over 30,000 employees. And we did two things with that data. We did a very similar analysis to see how is the year-over-year trend in income relative to taxes and tax withholdings in particular. And that analysis implied that, just like we saw with the Treasury data, that perhaps the withholdings were a bit more than they should have been relative to what the average tax reduction should have produced. But also, more importantly, and this dovetails to what other analysts have actually suggested on the exact flip side of what I'm suggesting is a risk, we clearly saw that consumers were not paying attention. Our own employee, there was no statistical difference in the number of people making a change in their withholdings, and it's a very small percentage of the population. And so, unfortunately, it means that even though the IRS tried through a PR campaign and through the issuance of a tax calculator to get people to realize that the whole structure of the way withholdings are made based on the prior regime of exemptions and allowances, it was likely to lead to many people now under withholding. But it also has the possibility of some people will get a positive surprise, and that's the devil in the details, because the tax reform was so enormous. The demographics of your income level, your household composition, and where you live in the country is likely to push certain people more in the direction of a negative surprise or a positive surprise. So at a very minimum, it's the big eye-popping numbers. When you think of 75% of people receive a refund and the average refund is a little bit less than $3,000, that helps you to understand why it plays such a substantial role in the used car market. But by the way, it also plays a big role, I believe, in the economy and consumer spending, especially in the second quarter. And I also think it plays a big role in the financial health of the consumer, using some of that money to get current on bills and to catch up from holiday spending. And so my conclusion is it's a big enough risk that if we saw an impact on used vehicle prices in 2017, when there actually wasn't any change to rates at all, it was merely a change in how refunds were handled and issued, then I fear that it's likely to produce a similar kind of impact this year. So we will be putting together more of the findings. It still has that absolute possibility that there could be segments of the market that are stronger than others. And my advice is, especially for dealers who are traditionally used to starting to stock up inventory, is to go slow this year and to pay attention to what they're seeing in their traffic and their demand, and act on act on what they're seeing only once they have seen the whites of their eyes, if you will.
Okay, we're looking forward to that. Just a second question on mix. If I look at, you know, slides 13 and 14, maybe starting with 14, it looks like there's going to be another, you know, 2 or 3 years for sort of a normalization of sales in your auction to kind of catch up to the trailing where new vehicle sales are. I mean, the mix adjusts to, you know, what the new vehicle market is. But if we look back at page 13, with even just a small, you know, uptick or normalization of mix in your auctions, you're already starting to see an extreme slowdown in pickup and SUV pricing. And I'm just curious, as you look at sort of a normalization of mix in the used vehicle market, that as we see sort of this delta, even not maybe getting exactly to match what new vehicle mix is right now, but as we see the used vehicle market shift more in that direction, that we could see some more, pressure or a lack of increases in pickups and SUVs and crossovers, just on those two segments. You know, what do you think on pricing and this mix shift?
Yeah, I believe it's definitely going to play a role. It's not likely to be as negative as what we experienced, say, back in 2015 and 16, when the car segments were very negative, and yet we saw extremely positive price performance in trucks and SUVs, because, largely speaking, because of the low historical production of SUVs in particular relative to their size now in the new vehicle market, they still are largely underrepresented in the used vehicle market. Certain makes and models are almost impossible to find. And so as a result, I don't really think we're going to see the kind of negative numbers we saw with sedans just a couple of years ago. But on the flip side, looking at sedans, the price performance, I think, completely speaks to what you can track is happening in the new vehicle market. So the massive reductions in supply and production, which many people are interpreting as the consumer doesn't want the sedans anymore, I actually think has been a bit overdone in the new vehicle market, and it's more that the manufacturers don't want to make sedans anymore, and especially the domestic manufacturers. So the price performance we've seen this year would suggest that there's demand for sedans, but that demand is tied to affordability, and so you're in a scenario that the wholesale supply is clearly on the decline for cars, and is likely to continue to kind of favor, above average performance. SUVs and pickups is, I would say, all eyes are on the new vehicle market. If we start to see big increases in discounting and big increases in incentives on the new vehicle side, then that will translate and we will see even weaker performance. But so far, we've seen pretty good discipline. The new vehicle supply numbers concerned me in October and November, but by December, the truck numbers came down pretty substantially. Some of that might have been commercial sales that especially were helping the pickup truck market. But I think we're starting 2019 on the new vehicle side in relatively healthy position that would suggest that that we really won't see that kind of heavy incentives and discounting that would dramatically cause the used vehicle market to follow suit. But that's what we'll be paying attention to.
Great. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. See you next week.
And thank you. We have our next question from Chandni Luthra with Goldman Sachs.
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you for that detailed call. It was extremely helpful. I just have a very quick one. What are you guys seeing from a subprime credit availability and demand standpoint? And I guess, you know, what are the key considerations in that complex in 2019?
So the subprime has clearly continued, lending, especially in the auto space, has continued to be available. And our analysis actually suggests that as the year progressed, there was more appetite and more lending to subprime. To a degree, the full year data, the lending data is a little bit slower, so we haven't seen everything from the last 2 months of the year. But we observed in our own DealerTrack data that essentially it would appear that lenders got more aggressive in the second half of the year with subprime borrowers in particular, meaning that we saw declining spreads on the interest rate premium that those borrowers had been paying relative to the year before and the beginning of the year. We also saw a willingness to accept longer terms that had abruptly ended the prior year. And all of that suggests to us that potentially the aggressiveness probably is not necessarily a good thing for the long term. For example, if you look at the New York Federal Reserve panel with their Equifax data, 21% of the auto loan origination dollars in the third quarter, the second and the third quarter, was subprime. And that means that subprime was overrepresented relative to the number of borrowers in the marketplace. And when you consider the typical price on a vehicle for a subprime is lower, it really means from a volume perspective that they were overrepresented. So we think that that's not likely to continue in 2019, especially if you consider what's happening with the yield curve and the potential that financial markets will be pushing lenders to be more risk-averse. You would expect there to be a retreat from that. So I think that's one of the areas that especially the new vehicle market will be vulnerable. To the extent that the new vehicle market has had challenges like with subprime credit or interest rates pushing average payments too high, so far that's been to the benefit of the used vehicle market. So I think we would have to have an extreme event, an extreme increase in interest rates or an extreme credit tightening for it to really take a bite of the used vehicle market. But I do think it was positive and probably a bit too positive in the second half of 2018.
That's phenomenal. Fantastic. Thank you. And just quickly, one more. I know you touched upon this briefly on the call. As we think about wholesale volumes, which you mentioned would be down in 2019, you know, looking into different buckets of that volume, you said repos would be up slightly and dealer volume, you know, would continue to be weak. How about the other buckets, you know, if you think about fleet or rental risk units?
Yeah, so we expect both fleet and rental risk to be at best flat. I think the continuing trends on rental risk suggest that what the rental car companies have done with their own fleet has probably reached a point of stability. So they're no longer in a period where they're selling off, and therefore you wouldn't be expecting more increase. But what's really impacting volumes in the wholesale market is the move of the rental car companies to sell more vehicles direct to consumer and through their own used retail stores. And so that they actually have seen the largest declines, year over year in the auction market. Repos have the potential from the discussion we just had, and especially if you further hypothesize that if we're correct that the tax refund season is going to cause some problems for certain segments of the market, then we might see delinquencies increase, and therefore repossessions would be likely to follow. And if so, we may be catching up on some of the flat performance of repos, because effectively, if you drew a line and said, will repossessions follow just the amount of total loans out there, this year was very disappointing in terms of the very small growth in repossessions. And it's because consumers took higher take-home pay and got current on their loans, especially their auto loans, and effectively we didn't see the deterioration that you would normally have, even in a market that it has such low unemployment. So I think we have the potential for that one to improve, but the other ones are likely to be at best flat.
Great, thank you so much.
And thank you. As a reminder, if you have a question, you can enter the queue by pressing star, then one. And we have our next question from Michael Milman with Milman Research.
Thank you. So following up on a couple things, and talking about the refunds, considering that refunds are very likely, as you said, to be down this year, And on the other hand, withholding is likely to be up, sort of to catch up. What does this really suggest for the economy as a whole for 2019?
Yes.
Besides what it means for the auto industry, and I have a couple other questions.
So you and John are both doing your best at getting me to tell you everything that we're going to put in our report later in the week. There is no question that it plays a big role in auto and especially the used vehicle market, as we've discussed. But I also think it traditionally plays a very large role in the outperformance that we typically see in the growth in GDP in the second quarter. And also, if you study consumer finance trends like defaults or delinquencies, there is clear seasonality in those trends that tend to improve in the second quarter, and I think it's a function of robust tax refunds. And the concern here is that it's a surprise, will be a surprise. The facts, and I think there's been one report that Home Depot in their conference call last quarter, their CFO acknowledged that they did an analysis of their employees, and their employees too had not been making any changes that are any different than prior years. And that's a fundamental assumption that we're making. This will be a surprise for many people. And just that surprise alone, forget the government shutdown, could potentially cause filings and any refunds that are still being issued to be collectively hitting the economy later than normal. And so I think when you've got all of those trends, and then as John suggested, one thing that you can infer from this is that if there is that kind of surprise, there will be political backlash related to pushing the IRS to revise the withholding process. And they actually did issue a report this past July where they suggested that there would be substantial changes to the W-4 that are more in keeping with the new tax methodology. But that would imply, if we're correct, that suddenly we're going to have lower take-home pay, which would in essence sort of act like a tax increase. So it's a double whammy if we're right. And I do think that that has much broader implications for the economy than just what we'll see with used vehicle prices.
Moving to the rental car, it looks like the rental car companies have had good results in this past years selling cars. It looks like, however, that they're getting these results even though they're not selling sedans as much as they were. They're selling the higher end, the light trucks, which where prices haven't been as good, yet their prices seem to be good. So a little, maybe I'm seeing this incorrectly, but or maybe some explanation. And just in terms of numbers, I think you just said that you expected sales by the rental car companies, at least auction sales, to be flattish or down. What do you expect their purchases to be this year from the OEMs? And what was it for the full year last year? Thank you.
So you want to talk about the purchases?
Yeah, I'll cover the purchases. So, you know, 2017 was a big defleeting moment for rental car companies. Their fleet sales were down as they try to optimize their fleet level. And we do think that they hit that level in 2018. Rental purchases were up 7% in 2018 versus 2017. And you hit the nail on the head. Rental car purchases in 2018, rental cars specifically, were down 12%. So overall, rental purchases were up 7%, but the car segment was still down double digits. We do think they're probably at their optimum level right now, just based on kind of what they're doing at auction. Like Jonathan mentioned, not kind of having that volume flow through auctions and finding alternative channels to dispose of those vehicles. But looking at 2019, we can expect rental purchases to be up, especially with that 7% increase. You know, at best, it's probably flat coming into this year.
And I will point out also that if you look at their purchase composition, what they're buying in 2018, and you also look at what we can see that they're selling at Mannheim, they are basically in between what we observe in the entire wholesale market and what we observe in the new vehicle market. So they haven't moved completely away from cars. They're just sort of in between. So they're still benefiting, and especially when you consider many of the units they probably took advantage of the strong pricing this spring and summer was to sell more of the sedans that they had from 2 years ago. They probably have had as much of a benefit of the price performance we've seen in sedans. But also, in general, they are definitely selling and buying a richer vehicle overall, be it a sedan or be it an SUV. They are purchasing vehicles, and their fleet is much more composed of vehicles that are retail-ready, that represent exactly what the consumer wants. And that, too, has probably helped to influence, the rental risk index to be much stronger than it traditionally has been, because fundamentally you have a richer composition of vehicles.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
And thank you. Our next question is from Chris Bottiglieri with Wolf Research.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the question.
Hi, Chris.
Hey. So I guess the first question I had for you was, what are your perspective on the trend of the availability of off-lease vehicles at physical auction lanes and how that's trended relative to recent quarters, if you've seen any kind of change there?
So throughout the year, off-lease was clearly the one real set source of vehicles that continued to provide more vehicles, and it was a function of lease maturity still moving towards the absolute peak, which we said would happen in 2019. But within the year, that absolute peak is definitely focused on the second quarter as a function of maturities. But if you go out and you look at the incentive programs that most of the companies are offering today, there's a substantial amount of lease pull-aheads, with some manufacturers actually reaching out a full year and offering tantalizing deals for people who have a lease that matures at the end of 19 to be trading for a new vehicle now and moving into a new lease. So we think when you combine that, the maturities will actually likely peak in the first couple of months of 2019, and that will translate into the volumes having reached their absolute peak, when traditionally the spring bounce would be in its highest mode for the year. We've really, as I suggested in the numbers that I shared for 2018 and 2019, this is happening at the same time that there is definitely a longer-term shift towards digital, towards non-physical off-site transactions, be it private sales that they have on platforms like our OVE or through other ways in which they're selling to dealers or to other types of companies. And so that's causing the volumes physically at auction to decline, decelerate, and then into 2019 we actually think decline even more. So that actually puts a scenario when you consider that many of the kind of non-physical auctions are not as open. The virtual auctions are often closed. They're often to specific buyers, and the net result is some dealers have access to that inventory and some dealers do not, and that helps to explain why we see this huge divergence in franchises continuing to say used vehicle inventory is strong and growing, and yet independents have been saying for almost a year now that inventory of used vehicles is declining. And I think that will continue to play out, if not get dramatically more pronounced in 2019.
And to add to what Jonathan said, if you look at the CPO market, for example, in 2018 CPO results came in at $2.699 million, to be exact, which is the best year on record for certified pre-owned vehicles. So even the dealers, especially at the franchise lots, are seeing the strength of consumers shopping for certified units, which is helping, dealers get the vehicle when it comes on their lots and then just flip it or certify it on their lot into the retail market rather than take it to auction.
Gotcha, makes sense. And then kind of a follow-up here. You know, given these structural changes from upstream remarketing and some of these manufacturer pull-ahead programs that you're referencing, do you think that off-lease volumes are as relevant today for used car pricing as they were, you know, in recent years? Is this, do you think it's as big of a driver for the direction of used car pricing as we kind of look forward?
Yes, I do think they still play a very big role, in part because the growth in retail sales has all been in vehicles that are less than 4 years old. And there is no question that off-lease is the absolute dominant source of vehicles in that category. And by the way, it's the only part of that category that has continued to grow, where, as we've been discussing, rental risk and fleet and program units have been on the decline before we got to this point. But I would also emphasize that off-lease units influence pricing and influence the market in an additional way, and that is, in general, those vehicles are higher quality vehicles from a mileage perspective. And so what we see is some really differing trends when you look at mileage, that off-lease vehicles cause the average mileage of a 2- and 3-year-old vehicle to be much lower per year relative to what you see with any other kind of age segment. So when you have a disproportionate number of those vehicles represented, taking up, you know, approaching in terms of age close to 50% of the market, it has an influence on pricing because people are willing to spend for a higher quality vehicle, even from a pure mileage perspective relative to what historically has been available. So that will continue, even though we're emphasizing that off-lease maturities are peaking and volumes will start to decline. It's still, on a relative term, almost 1.5 million more units than we had back just 3 or 4 years ago. And so that we are not projecting that to be dramatically declining. And lease penetration on the new vehicle side appears to have stabilized in 2018 and is no longer declining. So you can project that out 2 to 3 years and say, hey, the market is now in a mode that it can depend on a continued healthy flow of these vehicles into the wholesale market.
Gotcha. Okay, very helpful. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
And we have no further questions in queue. I will now turn the call back over to Mr. Shermer for closing remarks.
Hey, great. Thank you, Vanessa, and thanks to everyone who participated in the call. And a special thanks to Jonathan and Zoe and the team for assembling all the data and keeping it interesting. Look for updates on the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index in the coming months and for information about the next quarterly call, which will be held on April 5th at 11 Eastern. So if you have questions or still need answering or like to request any follow-up, feel free to reach out to our team. We can be reached at manheim.data@coxautoinc.com. And that does conclude our call today. Thanks again for your interest in the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index. We hope you have a nice week.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. We thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.